The woman we're going to hear from next is in the unusual position that she acts as a lawyer in the United States for clients who've been victims of clerical abuse, having herself been sexually abused by a priest. Although she's American, her abuser was in fact Father Brendan Smith, whose case, as you may remember, was credited with the collapse of the government in 1994 and who was ultimately convicted of 91 counts of child molestation. The abuse had a horrendous toll on this woman's life and that of her family. Her older sister was also a victim, and both that sister and her brother died from fatal drug overdoses as a result of what happened earlier in their lives. To date, the Catholic Church in the United States has refused to release any records of where Father Brendan Smith served or to publicly acknowledge the hurt that he inflicted on several children in the United States. Helen McGonigal, good morning.
Good morning.
Now, when did you first come in contact with Father Brendan Smith?
Well, it was in the summer of 1967. We had moved to a town called East Greenwich, Rhode Island, in New England, and bought a new house. My grandmother was to live with us. She was from Ireland. She was from Listowel. My grandmother suggested to my mother to have the house blessed. We had a new house, let's have it blessed. And the priest that was sent over to do that was Father Brendan Smith.
Now, that established a relationship between your family and Father Brendan Smith. How did the abuse start?
Well, even in that first meeting with him, this was when I was 5 years old. I was just a few weeks from starting first grade and turning six. During that first meeting, the grooming started, in which he put me on his knee, he tickled me, he put the coin behind the ear and was very playful to try to establish rapport. But the first instance of abuse happened at my school once I was in the first grade. The nun that I had, our school was run by the Sisters of Mercy, sent me off with Father Smith alone. Under the pretext of being one-on-one with him to become comfortable in anticipation of taking the sacrament of penance my second grade year, the next year.
Mm. Did you tell anyone at the time?
No, not at first. When I was a child, once Smith had molested me in the school in an empty classroom that first time, and there were different events, but he had told me that I would end up like the body in the woods, and that was a death threat. It was, I later came to discover that indeed a body of a decomposed little girl was found in the woods by our school around 1968. And on top of that threat by Smith, I had a nun who was very strict and instilled in me the fear of God. If you even thought, so much as thought about touching your private parts. So I felt as if there wasn't a place to turn to, and so I didn't tell anyone at the school, and I didn't tell my parents at the time either. It wasn't until many years later that, as an adult, that I grew stronger and felt comfortable. And of course, now Brendan Smith is deceased, and that helps as well, because even if your perpetrator is miles and miles away, a victim such as myself still feels can still feel a sense of fear as a result.
You discovered much later on, too, that your sister had been abused by him.
Yeah, my sister was 5 years older. Her name was Kathleen. And what his pattern seemed to have been, at least in my school, I was the sixth victim to come forward. At least that's what the Vicar General of the Diocese of Providence had told me. I was number six. But what I have done is I located a seventh victim who came forward unknown to me a month later, and I located an eighth victim, and then there's my sister. And what seems, from what I know of the folks that I have connected with, there was the pattern of either being in the early years, age six or seven, or 5 years older. My sister was 5 years older, so she was around the time of being confirmed. And again, she'd have one-on-one contact with Smith. She ended up having special privileges because of him. He allowed her to sell the ice cream at school and things like that. And in fact, I did eyewitness one instance of him being in our bedroom molesting my sister.
There's a picture in the Sunday Tribune newspaper of yourself and your brother and your sister, and I'm thinking of the devastation that it caused your family, because both your brother and sister suffered terrible consequences as a result of what happened to them, what happened to the two girls in childhood.
This decimated our family, absolutely. My brother was not, to my knowledge, a direct victim of Brendan Smith, but he was impacted. And here's why. One of the victims that was my childhood neighbor that I relocated after 36 years, he's a male. He's been in the Boston Globe in public about his experiences, related to me that my mother saw Brendan Smith sodomizing him behind the stone wall of our house. How much she actually could see behind the stone wall, I don't know, but she knew that something improper was going on. And came running out of the house. She caught Smith and came running out of the house. This was 1969. And Smith told that little boy he was allowed to sodomize him. His parents allowed it and God allowed it. So that impaired his relationship both with God and his parents. And he charged up to my mother and threatened my mother. And I've since discovered through my brother, my older brother was 8 years older, that Brendan Smith attacked my mother and we suspect may have raped her. My mom's deceased now. So my mom consequently had a very difficult time in 1969 and by 1970 was hospitalized. So this had a huge impact on my family, huge. It affected me, my sister, my mother, my brother. And so that was the dynamic. And many people have asked me, well, where was your father? And my father was traveling. He worked for a major U.S. company at the time, and he was traveling on the road a lot. So he wasn't around, and Brendan Smith knew that my mother could not drive. So when the car was not in the driveway, my dad was gone. The car was likely at the airport, and it was a perfect time for him to gain access to our home.
The consequences, as I mentioned, your sister and your brother tragically took their own lives.
Yeah, my sister, the way this erupted, it was in 2005. My sister had a battle with alcoholism and had made a wonderful recovery. She had 17 years of sobriety, went on and got her master's degree. Made a midlife career change and became a school teacher. And she was just a wonderful person, married with a child. And she relapsed. And the situation became quite serious. And I was fearing for her life, that she might cause harm to herself or a car accident and harm somebody else. So I went to my father and I said, "What is going on?" And my dad's response was, "Well, it was that priest in Rhode Island that gave your sister alcohol. That's where her problems come from." And I had no idea. I couldn't make sense of what he was saying. I had no idea who he was talking about. And he said it was the priest from across the street. And Brendan Smith became very friendly with a family in our neighborhood that lived across the street. And as a result of that, at least three households in our neighborhood were impacted, where kids were victimized by him from those households. But what my father, not really realizing what he was saying, because, as I said, he wasn't around for a lot of this, he at least had connected that there was this bad priest that, you know, gave my sister alcohol. So that's when I started looking into who was this priest and discovered that Brendan Smith was the individual and had molested the girl from across the street in the house where he often visited and stayed. And I kept digging deeper and deeper and realized that not only did this impact my sister, it impacted me.
Now, the activities of Brendan Smith, he was discovered molesting a child and he's sent off for treatment, but then returns to the parish. I mean, extraordinary carry-on. We know now, of course, the great cover-ups that happened within the Catholic Church. But it turns out there's even something more peculiar, that Brendan Smith, when already he'd been charged in Ireland with counts of sexual abuse, is allowed into America as a priest.
Yeah, this discovery, Pat, was just made last week, and I was horrified to learn this. What has been recently revealed by the Boston Archdiocese is the identity of priests who came over from Ireland that may or may not have been mentioned in the Murphy Report, but who had faculties in the Boston Archdiocese. And on that list was Father Brendan Smith. And when I heard that, I was horrified. And then the Boston Archdiocese released a second statement saying, well, he had faculties for a mission August 3rd and August 4th of 1991. Now, right then and there, that sounded somewhat peculiar to me for a priest to have faculties for a mission of only 2 days. And so I started to put together the timetable of when that occurred and how it coincided with the decision by the RUC to prosecute Smith, which came down July 25th, 1991, only a few days before. So he was on the run from the law when he was granted faculties in the Archdiocese of Boston. And as you said, he was caught back in 1968 in my parish and sent back to Ireland to go to Purdiesburn Mental Hospital and allowed back in 1969. So the pattern in the late 60s repeated itself all the way up into the early 1990s in recent times.
What are you looking for now from the church?
Well, I think the people of Ireland, as a result of the Murphy Commission report, which we know was very limited. I mean, it only covered the Archdiocese, and it only covered diocesan priests, as I understand it, not religious order priests like Brendan Smith, although he's mentioned throughout the report. But we need to have a sea change. If we want the Catholic Church to survive, the people are the church. The bishops and archbishops, cardinal and pope, are not the church. There's many more of us than there are of them. And, I mean, myself, I cannot go into a Catholic church. I cannot worship in a church because I am so triggered by just what's inside the church and the memories it brings back, the smell of the paraffin, everything. And that's unfortunate. That's something I've lost through all this. But for people who want to stay within Catholicism, there has to be a major sea change. And the church itself has to be completely reformed, or it's spelling its own demise, and that's what we're seeing. I mean, this problem in Ireland or in the Boston Archdiocese or Los Angeles or Philadelphia and other places where this has been closely looked at is not unique. It's worldwide. And these priests that are offenders and those that harbor them are all over the world, and they've gone into Latin America and other locations. So bystanders and victims have to stand alike up against this very large governmental institution and say no more, and we're not going to donate, and we're not coming to your churches anymore. That we're not going to have reform until the barn is cleaned out.
Helen McGonigal, thank you very much for talking to us on the program today.
Okay, thank you.